Lauren,
Jocelyn,
Nicole,
Alice,
Lillian,
Ava.
Okay, for this podcast, we're going to be reading and evaluating some books. First of all, starting with some children's classics, and then we're going to compare them to some contemporary young adult novels and see what the difference is nowadays, what sells as compared to in the old days.
We're not reading the whole book, though.
No, we're just thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. We are going to just read the first page. And we're going to be looking for what the hook is, characterization, promises and expectations made on the first page, setting, see if we can tell the time period and place, what the main problem is, emotion, mood, voice, and point of view. So go ahead.
Okay.
Ava.
Mrs. Rachel Lynde lived just where the Avonlea main road dipped down into a little hollow fringed with alders and ladies' eardrops and traversed by a brook that had its source way back in the woods of the old Cuthbert place. It was reputed to be an intricate headlong brook in its earlier course through these woods, with dark, dark secrets of pool and cascade. But by the time it reached Lynde's Hollow, it was a quiet, well-conducted little stream, for not even a brook could run past Mrs. Rachel Lynde's door without due regard for decency and decorum. It probably was conscious that Mrs. Rachel was sitting at her window keeping a sharp eye on everything that passed, from brooks and children up, and that if she noticed anything odd or out of place, she would never rest until she had ferreted out the whys and wherefores thereof. That's the first paragraph. Should I keep going?
That's probably good, right there. Okay. Is there a hook in there?
Just the interest in the character.
Just
the interest in Mrs. Rachel Lynde, but I've heard people say that you should start your book with your main character, and Mrs. Rachel Lynde is a secondary character. She's not the main character.
She's hardly even secondary.
Yeah, she doesn't show up very often. When she does, she comes in with a bang, but but there is no mention here of even the Cuthberts who are...
Or the problem.
And there's a lot of scene setting, a lot of description.
It sets up
Mrs. Rachel Lynde's personality.
I think that in classics, they did that a lot. They did a lot of scene setting, a lot of description.
Giving the river a personality.
Mm-hmm. The brook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Brook. That's a very
Would that
first
fly
paragraph.
Nowadays?
No.
So whose point? What point of view is this?
I believe it's omniscient. Very distant omniscient.
Yeah. Very distant omniscient. Is this the way the rest of the book is? Do you know? Have you read it?
I have. It gets into Anne's personality. When you get into Anne, there's a lot of emotion there. There's a lot of the things that happened to her and her past.
I'm pretty sure it remains an omniscient narrator throughout, but it gets deeper into various characters in different scenes.
Yeah.
Does it have other characters' point of views?
I have looked at this. The way that I write personally, I have discovered that I got from books like this because I head hop
mm-hmm.
from person to person. And almost all the classics that I've read do the same thing. They have a very distant viewpoint, but you go from this character's head to that character's head. And they didn't really even think about it. It wasn't an issue.
Yeah, it used to be actually, I think, the dominant narrative voice was omniscient. And that has changed a lot.
Even in children's books, it was omniscient.
Yes.
And a lot of viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. And why do you think, do you think that we could get away with that now?
No, I don't. I wish we could because it gets into a lot of different characters.
Yeah, I think there are readers for this market. I just don't think there are publishers for this market.
I actually read a middle grade fantasy that was published only about 5 years ago that does this, so there are still publishers out there that will do this.
I stand corrected.
But not often. Not often. It's a hard sell, I would think.
And why is that?
They were more interested, back to this point, they were more interested in telling a story than in how they told the story.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much about the craft of writing, it was about getting the story down and getting your story out to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And when you limit yourself to one viewpoint, you're also limiting your reader's involvement in that story. And a lot of times they did that so that they could get the whole story and get all of the information in about that story rather than paying attention to what's the publisher going to want.
Yeah. But that also distances you kind of emotionally from the characters because you know a lot of characters, but you might not know them real well. Or maybe they were just really good at helping you get to know each character. It takes
talent to be able to
do multiple viewpoints well.
I think they were really good at moving smoothly from one character to another so that you could see the differentiation between being in Anne's head and being in Mrs. Rachel Lynde's head and being in Marilla's head.
However, I think that what publishers these days are looking for, and what I think that to some extent they've cultivated in readers, is a deeper emotional connection with a single character. I don't think that you get you get attached to these characters, but I don't think you have the same kind of deep emotional understanding of them or connection with them as you do in contemporary books that have been published in the past few years, where you only have one or two point of view characters and you get really deep into their heads.
Well, you can take it from that point of view, but we just read one paragraph and we have a really good picture of Mrs. Rachel Lynde just in that one paragraph. And that was done not through characterization and not through getting into the character's head, but through setting. And they have almost eliminated the idea of creating a setting. And so we have to use other techniques to get into the characters' heads, because setting, this type of setting, is no longer acceptable.
Plus, I saw the movie and that helped. Yeah.
And part of it, too, I guess, this is something I've heard. Part of the reason for this is because it used to be that there wasn't, you know, TV, movies, internet. People didn't travel as much, so they didn't get to see these places. Now we see it all, and we know what it looks like. And also, young people nowadays, especially with computers and instant gratification and all these things, they don't have as much of the patience or the attention span. They want to get into the emotion and the action right away.
I think because of media as well, because of television and movies and the internet, we see things differently in our heads. And so we have a different way of describing them. We have a different way of, you talk about the cinematic point of view. Did that even exist in 1900?
No.
You know? I mean, there are so many points of view that they didn't have back then. And I think there has been a complete shift in the way that we see things in our minds that makes a big difference in the way that we read.
Yeah.
We also have to remember that these are classics because they were done well. I mean, there's a lot of books that were not done well, and that's why they're not still around. And so I can see the shift towards how they used to do it to how the trend is going now. I think there's a reason for the evolution, and I think it's a good thing overall.
Some of those classics are really hard to get into, and a lot of young people wouldn't read them unless they had to for school.
I get frustrated with classics because of the trends that they seem to follow. Mm-hmm. And so for contemporary fiction to take a different tack with some of those points of view and some of those things that they dealt with. I think of Wuthering Heights. That book annoys me no end because I want to step into the story and smack some people upside the head. They're just being stupid. But, I mean, it's a classic and it's got people with real problems and real miseries, and I think that's what
and for
made
its
the
day
back then.
For its day, I think it was very modern.
Yeah, it was very advanced.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we should probably wrap up that one. And in case you haven't guessed by now, that was Anne of Green Gables by L.M. Montgomery.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask another question about it though, about the emotion, mood, voice. Did you sense an emotion or mood through the description?
It was the language that she used.
It was very formal.
Very formal, but at the same time, very catching.
Playful.
Playful, yes. Good word.
With the brook and everything. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so moving on to more modern, contemporary young adult story.
Okay, here's our contemporary example. Once upon a time, there was a pair of pants. They were an essential kind of pants, jeans, naturally, blue, but not that stiff, new blue that you see so often on the first day of school. They were a soft, changeable blue with a little extra fading at the knees and the seat and white wavelets at the cuffs. They'd had a good life before us, you could just tell. I guess a thrift shop is like the pound in some ways. Whatever you get there owes a lot to its previous owners.
Our pants weren't like the neurotic puppy whose parents left it alone, barking itself hoarse from morning till night. They were more like the grown-up dog whose family loved it, but had to move to an apartment building or maybe to Korea, where people sometimes eat dogs. I could tell the pants hadn't come to our lives because of tragedy. They'd just witnessed one of those regular but painful life transitions. That, it turns out, is the way of the pants.
Was that the prologue, or was that...
That was a prologue. But the story seems to start there, so that's where I started
reading. That's pretty good. I think that's good. So let's start with the hook. Once upon a time, there was a pair of pants. Is that what it...
That's how it starts. That's the first
the line.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I mean, that grabs me. It's like, what? You know, fairy tale.
It would probably drag me into the second paragraph, but not much more.
Okay.
A
lot of description about the pants, huh? They're important.
Yeah.
And I like that it's sort of a collective narrative. It's a we who's narrating. And I find that fascinating. So to me, that would keep me going, just to find out who is this we that's so fascinated with the pants.
But it turns to I within the first page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's I and we at the same time. So it's a single person, but talking about a group experience, it looks like.
So what voice is that?
I think it's still first person, but it's just a
is
first
this
person.
All narrated by one person?
I don't know.
If I remember correctly, it's a group, and they're passing the pants.
Yeah,
so it changes.
So it changes.
Yeah. I've seen the movie. So what about character, then? We're talking about we and I. It's in the first person, but we don't know which character is talking yet.
I don't think they've even introduced characters yet, except for the pants.
Yeah.
But they lack dogs.
But there is a voice. There's a definite voice
definitely
there.
Yeah, definitely voice.
So we know there's going to be, I mean, they're talking about foreign countries.
There's
the
no
dogs,
setting.
Pants. No setting, yeah.
It's definitely
there's
something
no setting,
in the modern
no
world, though, where they talk about, you know, thrift stores and blue
jeans
so,
and people moving to Korea.
Yeah, so you know that it's a contemporary story. It's not in an exotic setting.
But there's also something... It lets you know there's something about those pants. There's something interesting or different about them because they make it so important.
They create the pants as a main character.
Yeah.
Kind of a character, yeah.
And there seem to be establishing sort of a mythology almost around the pants.
Mm-hmm. And they don't live where they eat dogs.
Yeah.
So, emotion, problem, is there a problem set up yet?
Not yet.
I don't think so.
Okay, just kind of a mystery, kind of a, you're kind of wondering, curiosity.
Yeah, what is it with these pants?
An emotion.
They love their pants.
Yeah.
And they don't like eating dogs.
It creates an absence. That first section creates an absence of character and an absence of setting. Nothing exists except the pants.
Although there is a strong voice there.
Yes,
there's kind of a fun,
and there's a
wee. Interesting voice.
Usually pants are personal, and they're just with you, not with a group of people.
So it kind of
it's
makes
intriguing.
You wonder, why is there a group attachment to this one pair of pants?
But I see what you're saying. It's almost like this is happening in a little vacuum right now because there is no setting, and it's...
Yeah, so it seems to be that way on purpose so that you become attached to the pants before you become attached to the characters almost.
Mm-hmm. And that probably is deliberate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they are passing the pants from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Pants are the only thing that holds them together.
Yep, it looks like a few paragraphs later before you get the names of characters. So definitely establishing this mystique about the pants before they get to the characters.
Mm-hmm. And it's to me, it's interesting enough to pull you along. Even though they're talking about a pair of pants, it's... There's just something about this pair of pants that you want to know.
And if I recall, there isn't a scene unless the pants are with that person. So the pants really are the main story driver through it.
You wouldn't call it a character?
They're pants.
But it compares them to a dog, and it says that the thrift store is a pound.
Hmm.
Yeah. They're pants.
I do agree with you that they're kind of like a character. They have a lot of significance.
So comparing this to the classic, yes, it definitely seems like voice is a more key driver in this than in Anne of Green Gables. That one was more about, you know, sort of playful language and description, while this one, it's the voice, really, that is pulling you in.
You also have to remember that this is first person. You're working with very obvious differences between first person and omniscient.
Mm-hmm. Where omniscient is more of a distant, you're kind of the distance looking on. In this contemporary one, you're right there.
Are you not going to reveal what this book is?
Gee, I wonder.
Well, for those of you who do not read YA Chick Lit, this is The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants by Anne Brochers, I think is how you say it.
I still think there's far too much focus on a pair of pants.
But that's what the whole book is about.
I know.
So, okay, well, we've used up our time with those two books, so we're going to wrap this one up and move on to our next one. Okay. Thanks for listening to Writing Snippets. Come back again. We're going to do one more contemporary young adult novel, First Page, and evaluate that.
Jason was going to Brain Camp. It had another name, a real name, but that's what everyone called it. Okay, he said, wedging a final pair of socks along the edge of his suitcase. The list, one more time. I picked up the piece of paper beside me. Pens, I said. Notebooks. Phone card. Camera battery. Vitamins. His fingers moved across the contents of the bag, finding and identifying each item. Check and double check. With Jason, it was always about being sure. Calculator, I continued. Laptop. Stop, he said, putting up his hand. He walked over to his desk, unzipping the slim black bag there, then nodded at me. Skip down to list number 2. I scanned down the page, found the words laptop, case, and cleared my throat. Blank CDs, I said. Surge protector. Headphones. By the time we'd covered that, then finished the main list. Stopping to cover 2 other subheadings, toiletries and miscellaneous, Jason seemed pretty much convinced he had everything, which did not, however, stop him from continuing to circle the room, mumbling to himself. It took a lot of work to be perfect. If he didn't want to break a sweat, there was no point in even bothering.
That was an interesting run-on sentence.
Is there a hook in there?
Brain camp.
Brain camp.
Yeah.
Interesting word.
OCD.
Well, we don't know who's talking, right? We just know Jason.
Yeah. We don't know if it's a friend or a sibling or a parent.
See, so that's kind of like your book.
We don't even know if it's a male or female.
Yeah. Right.
But they're both going to brain camp.
Are they both, or is it just one?
It's
just him, I think.
I think just Jason is going.
I like that it had lists. I like lists. But it also shows, that list also shows the time period. It's very modern, you know, with the laptop and all that stuff. Which can also outdate your story pretty fast nowadays.
Yeah,
blank CDs. I mean, so nowadays it would probably, well, we still have blank CDs, I guess.
Your iPad.
But you use your iPod and your,
your phone,
your BlackBerry. If you're going to use technology, you have to be pretty vague about it because tomorrow it's outdated.
But this obviously worked well for the time, this particular story and author.
Although I have to say that it is irritating when you get the second, when another version of a book comes out 15 or 20 years later and they've updated the technology.
That happens?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Tales of the Fourth Grade Nothing.
Really?
The stories would not work as well. The net? That would not have happened.
Okay, so we have our hook. What about character? We don't know who the main character is yet.
But we do get a pretty clear image of Jason, who seems to be an important person to the main character.
Yes.
We still don't even know what role Jason will play in the overall story.
And we don't know how they feel about Jason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's
not a lot
problem.
Of emotion there.
There's no emotion. There's no problem.
Except that Jason is going away, apparently.
But
very
meticulous.
Is that a good thing or
a
bad
thing?
Or
don't
is, know. Is that the first part of the problem? Is his problem at brain camp? Or is his problem with this person who is narrating the story?
Apparently
it's probably
his problem is packing.
Right now, yeah.
Jason must be important to this person that we don't know who it is yet.
Yeah.
I don't see any problem. I don't see any personality. Very little. Well, no, the Jason has a personality, but the narrator doesn't.
The narrator is giving Jason's personality in an interesting way.
And doesn't
way.
Have any emotion. There's no...
We don't know if this person's sad about Jason leaving or not.
So when does the hook come in? When does the story happen?
Yeah. So do we have any promises?
The hook is Saradesen. That's why people are going to read on and turn the page. The hook is on the cover.
Oh, okay. All right.
So what about promises, expectations? Are there any?
Not that I can find.
A relationship? We want to know
what's
forming here.
Okay.
We want to know
what's
going on.
Who are these two people and what is their relationship and how is that going to change when he leaves?
Mm-hmm. He's comfortable enough with this other character, I'm assuming it's a girl, to share his obsession with lists and let her go through his things.
And to pack his miscellaneous items.
Yeah.
He must be a mother.
A mother?
Maybe a sister.
I don't think his sister would have that much patience.
It's the housekeeper, we all know.
Our really, really close friends brought together by tragedy.
Okay. So we talk about problem, emotion, mood, voice, and POV. I mean, we don't get a whole lot from the first page.
Are you finding anything on the second page?
You see, I'm reading on.
But Jason is perfect. Right? Jason's kind of...
I like Ava's word for it.
OCD.
OCD.
Yeah. Do we like Jason?
I don't know.
Don't know.
Not sure yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's nothing to like.
Would you keep reading?
I wouldn't.
Careful. Okay, shall we reveal this book? What the name of it is?
It's called The Truth About Forever by Saradesen.
Okay. So out of the three books we've read... which one would you continue reading? I mean, which one drew you in the most from the beginning?
Anne of Green Gables.
Anne of Green Gables.
I would probably keep reading Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants also.
Me too.
But I would read
The Sisterhood of the Traveling
them.
Pants.
I've read Anne of Green Gables, and I just love the way, I just love the flow of the language. I love the sound of it. I love the pictures that she creates with words. But the, what is it?
The Truth About Forever.
The Truth About Forever actually sounds kind of intriguing to me. It's... it doesn't feel like there's anything there to draw me in, but I'm still curious.
Well, I usually give it the first chapter to pique my interest, and then I decide if I'm going to read on or not. I'm usually not as picky.
I'm a first pager.
You are? You're an
I have a short attention span.
I'm a book cover. If the artwork is good,
or the back of the book.
It's all about the artwork.
All right.
Unless I've heard or read the author before... I'm usually a first pager, sometimes first line.
I'm a review junkie. I don't even browse in bookstores. I just look for reviews online and find things that sound interesting from reviews. So
there you go. Okay, so this is how agents and editors look at our manuscripts. They look at that first page, and if it doesn't pull them in, Although these books all pulled somebody in from the first page.
But the thing to remember is that Anne Brashears and Sarah Dessen are both listed on the book as a New York Times bestselling author.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a huge difference to the editors and
the publishers
that they already have something out there that was good enough to hit the
So my question
New York Times bestseller
list. If you were to go back to the very start of these writers' careers, what was their very first book out? And they had to make an impression as a first-time author on a publisher and on an editor. What did they do to make those first books?
Time to hit the library.
Let's go find out. I sometimes find first books are the author's best books.
Yes.
Many times.
Because they work so hard on them to
And then
get
I don't
them
always like the sequels as much or the other books that they write as much.
Yep.
So. It's like people give up on the editing. Oh, she's been published 6 times over. We don't need to look at this.
It was actually pretty funny. My dad is a Louis L'Amour junkie. And I opened one of his books and found like 6 typos on one page. and when I started skimming through the book, it was obvious that it had not been edited. And I think at some point the editors just stopped going through these books because they knew they'd sell regardless.
Of course, they typed them on typewriters.
Some technology might help with that.
Yes. But it wasn't just
Or maybe he was pumping them out so fast that they...
Yeah, he got out 2 or 3
So be a one-hit wonder, folks.
Yep.
Well, what I get from this is... If I ever get anything, when I get something published, it's going to be up to me to be more and more of a stickler of getting my own stuff as good as I can get it before I send it to a publisher. Because after a while, people stop looking, and I don't want people to stop reading my books because the editing isn't up to me.
Yeah, I really respect when I go to conferences and things and hear well-established authors who still have critique partners and who still give their books to other people to read before they get them published. I think that just elevates my respect for them because I know that they still care about their craft.
They're still working
hard. They still want to be the best they can be in every manuscript. And
they're
that
not
really
just in it for the check.
Well, yeah. And then you hear the ego authors who get mad if anyone touches a sentence, even to try to make it better.
And we'll never be that way. Anyway, we are about out of time, but we've been talking about children's classics versus contemporary young adult novels, reading first pages and evaluating them, and we hope, you know, we've learned something from this. We've learned that on the first page, you know, it's important to have a hook and show some emotion.
Instant gratification.
But we find that not all of that is always on you know, the best-selling books in every first page of every best-selling book. So,
The end.
The end.
Thank you for writing some books or listening.